Chapter 7. Saturday, 11:28 a.m. Ashley woke for the second time. The first time, she'd been bouncing along in the dark, like on some kind of weird roller coaster ride. She'd convinced herself it was only a dream, a bad dream, but just a dream. Wrong, dummy. It was a nightmare. Her worst nightmare come true. Her tongue stuck to the back of her teeth. Her lips were cracked. Her head throbbed. Pins and needles raced up and down her arms and legs. She was ready to hurl at any moment, and she had to pee. Her eyes were wide open, but she saw nothing but impenetrable black. Had he blinded her? She blinked hard. Still nothing. Then she realized there was no noises. God, what had he done to her? She tried to scream, but all that emerged was a tiny squeak. But she heard it. She could hear it. That small triumph gave her the energy to take a deep breath, try to clear her fuzzy brain. She choked on the rank smell. Good God, what was that? Whatever the cause of the sickly sweet odor, it was too much for her stomach to handle. She rolled over, onto all fours, retching. Nothing came except the sour taste of acid and a mouthful of saliva. That didn't stop her guts from trying their best to kick their way from the inside out. Finally, the cramps and nausea passed. She rested her head on the cool floor. It was smooth. Cement? No, not cold enough. Her fingers traced over it, felt embossing. Small squares or diamonds? Linoleum. Thinking seemed to help the buzzing in her brain, so she cautiously crawled forward, hands sweeping out before her, exploring her new universe, trying hard not to panic. How had she gotten here? Bobby. She had gone to meet Bobby. Oh, God, had something happened to him? Bobby? Her voice was a hoarse croak. She swallowed and tried again. Bobby? Anyone? Is there anyone there? Now she was screaming, which only made her head pound more and burned her throat. She had the feeling she'd tried screaming the first time she woke. Her throat felt shredded. She flailed forward, only to be yanked hard by one ankle. Flopping over, she stretched, patting her clothing, reassured that other than her jacket missing and her pockets emptied, nothing seemed disturbed. Wait, that was weird. Her shoes were gone as well. Above her sock, on her left ankle, was a thick wire cable, the kind used when you tied a dog to a stake. She wanted to scream again, but instead forced herself to examine the wire. It was cinched tight around her leg. Not even a fingertip could fit below it. A metal clasp held it in place, fastened by a small padlock. Reversing her orientation, she followed the cable back to its origin. A round pole, smooth, metal, rose up from the floor. Hauling herself up the length of the pole, she stood. A wave of nausea and dizziness hit her. She grabbed onto the pole, liking its cold against her forehead and cheek. It helped to ease the headache. Her clothing was soaked in sweat, but her teeth were chattering, like she had a fever or something. Once the vertigo passed, she stood on tiptoe, tried to follow the pole up, and hit nothing. She tried to follow the wire, but couldn't walk. The darkness was so complete and disorienting that without the pole to hang on to, she fell. She couldn't even see her hand when she waved it in front of her face. Blind. She was blind. No, it was just dark. A basement. But basements had windows. Basements had sounds. Water pipes and furnaces and outside noises. All right, not a basement. A soundproof room with no windows. Like a vault. She shuddered, hugging her pole. Or like a coffin. What if there was no air, either? Maybe she was using up all her oxygen, wasting it by screaming and crawling around when she should be saving it. Who cared? A distant voice echoed through her brain. If she was dead, she was dead. But since it hadn't happened yet, no sense giving up. What if Bobby was lying just beyond her? What if she was his only hope? Emboldened by the thought, she dropped back to her hands and knees and followed the wire out to its end, measuring the dimensions of her prison. It stretched 8 feet in all directions, the pole at the center. Maybe she was trapped in a storage unit, or she could be underground in an old mine shaft or abandoned swimming pool that had been built over, or a secret government lab like in that horror film. Quashing the leading edge of her hysteria, she continued forward. No signs of Bobby or any other living person. Her hand brushed something plastic, a bucket of water that she almost up-dumped. No cup or ladle. She dunked her face into it, slurping the lukewarm, stale water as fast as she could. She couldn't remember ever being this thirsty. Next to the bucket, she found a bedside commode, like the ones at the nursing home where she'd gone to sing Christmas carols last year. Better than wetting her pants. With her bladder empty and her thirst slaked, she returned to sit with her back against her pole, the new center of her universe, knees drawn up to her chest, arms hugging herself. She'd almost gotten used to the stench, as long as she remembered to breathe through her mouth, but now that she had time to think, she remembered where she'd recognized the odor from. It smelled like roadkill. Burroughs led Gerald Yeager downstairs and outside to the patio. Figured it was best to get the mister as far away from his blushing ex-bride as possible. He gave Yeager the seat in the shade, all the better to watch his eyes without the sunlight making the man squint. Not that he was a suspect in his daughter's disappearance. No, of course not. This was just a polite exchange of information. Two guys shooting the breeze. Why one of their daughters could be a rotting corpse putrefying in a shallow grave. God, he hoped not. Last DB he caught was past ripe and well into the creepy crawly stage, maggots squirming all over. He wasn't in the mood to be looking at no dead kid's body today. In fact, he was seriously regretting switching weekends with Jimmy Dolan. But Dolan had a family reunion, and Burroughs' kids, well, right now, he wasn't exactly in the running for Father of the Year. He'd barely seen the boys all summer, had claimed overwork, falling into a pattern of letting his ex keep them even on his weekends. He loved his boys. He really, really did. He just didn't have what it took to be a full-time father, or, according to his ex, a full-time husband. Thing of it was, Kim was right, on both counts. What the hell was wrong with him? Same question he'd been asking the better part of 2 years. He just never seemed to find the energy to answer it. When he'd seen Ashley Yeager's room, it looked perfectly normal to Burroughs. The barren walls, beige decor, mass-produced furniture and linens could have been his own apartment. Maybe that's why he'd stuck around. He felt a kinship with the Yeager girl. Like she was sleepwalking through days and nights filled with apathy, just like Burroughs. Until finally, she couldn't take it anymore. Pretty sad. The person he felt most connected with in ages was a girl most likely dead. "You need a drink or anything?" he asked Yeager, after giving the man a few minutes to stew. "Glass of water or something?" "No." Yeager's gaze kept darting back to the house like he expected someone to interrupt them. Who? Burroughs wondered. Ashley? That would mean he was innocent. Or maybe the guy was guilty and simply couldn't look him square in the eye. I'm just gonna take some notes so I don't forget anything, okay? Burroughs pulled his digital recorder from his pocket and clicked it on. Yeager didn't even seem to notice. So, tell me about this photographer. Tardif. Yeager bristled, his body practically vibrating out of the chaise lounge, even though his face showed little expression. But little was more than Burroughs had seen from the man so far today. And what little seeped through the chink in Yeager's mask was enough to tell him Yeager hated Tardif. A lot. Good. A little bit of hate was good for bearing the soul.
He's tried to wreck my marriage before, Yeager said, his lip twisted in a sneer. Wanted to destroy my family, take it away from me. It. Didn't he mean them? Burroughs merely nodded sympathetically. Yeager kept talking. He's a big-deal fashion photographer. Wanted to become known as an artist. Melissa was trying to make a comeback after having Ashley, so they started working together. Only he also wanted more artistic... Yeager slashed finger quotes through the air with the last word. Intimate photos. Not just of her, but of Ashley as well. Melissa never asked me, never said nothing. Not until I saw them. Displayed in New York galleries, made a splash. He slept with Melissa, too. The last was an afterthought. Yeager wasn't upset by the sex, but rather the fact that he'd lost control of what was his. Family as possession. Burroughs scratched a few notes, nothing to imply the father was a suspect. No need to give the defense any fuel. But just to show he was actively listening to Yeager's rant. But the other man said nothing more. Only sat there, rigid, his back not touching the seat cushions. Did you call child services? Launch an investigation? Yeager looked offended. Of course not. I wasn't about to have strangers invade my privacy. Bad enough those photos were out there, being bought and sold. Melissa made no secret they were of her. They relaunched her career, for a few years at least. Did you confront Tardif? Ask him if anything more than taking photos happened? What good would that do? The damage was done. Burroughs scratched his cheek with his pen, closing his notebook. It was clear Yeager had nothing concrete, only a long-held grudge that was more about his pride and less about any possible abuse of his daughter. Thank you very much, Mr. Yeager. He left the father hiding in the shade while he went to see what Guardina was up to. She was infinitely more interesting than the cold-blooded father. He found her still in the girl's bedroom. She was sitting on the floor Indian style, a collection of items spread out around her on the beige carpet. An archaeologist trying to reconstruct a vanished tribe from discarded artifacts. Anything good? Burroughs asked from the doorway. She beckoned for him to join her. He crouched down beside her, poked at her cache with his ballpoint pen. She'd found several pieces of good quality costume jewelry that corresponded to the missing items from the closet. A very expensive digital SLR camera, a few artist pens, and one item that changed everything. This kid is different from any teenaged girl I've ever worked with. Guardino played a drum tattoo with two marking pens, the small sounds drowned out by the room's emptiness. Isn't that the whole point of being a teenaged girl? Standing out from the crowd, being an individual? He asked, checking the camera for a memory card and finding it missing. Not this girl. Instead, it's like she's trying to erase herself. Burroughs turned over the item that had most caught his eye. A metal letter opener with an intricate gold and silver etched handle.
Where'd you find this?
Taped to the back of the commode, in its own little cardboard sheath. I'd bet money she stole it from Mom. For what?
It's no good as a defensive weapon. Too flimsy.
She balanced the opener on end so she could see the blood-stained tip. Our Ashley is a cutter.
Great. Self-destructive tendencies and a high rate of suicide.
Not to mention these kids often feel disconnected from reality. Seek out fantasy worlds where they can control their environment. Escape to.
Aren't cutters usually abused? Maybe we should look at this Tardif guy more closely. See if he's been in recent contact with Ashley.
He filled her in with the little information Yeager had given him on Tardif. She tapped her wedding ring against the letter opener. Gold against silver. Considering their options. He sympathized. Some cases you had no leads at all. Some you had too many. All leading nowhere. This case was starting to feel like that.
Any evidence she was knocked up? He asked.
I can't rule anything out at this point. But... I think an eating disorder is more likely than pregnancy.
Fits with the mom.
And her attitude about Ashley's developing figure.
She scooped a handful of Austrian crystal necklaces and let them trickle through her fingers. We need to know what was on her computer and where she got this camera from. Looks like at least a $500 camera to me, or possibly something a professional photographer like Tardif might give a kid.
To bribe her or groom her?
Guardino held the beads up before her face like a veil she was trying to see through.
You think she was doing some modeling of her own?
Burroughs asked.
For Tardif or a friend out in Cyberland?
Someone who told her she was as beautiful as her perfect mother, who gave her what she needed?
Validation, attention,
love, he said with disdain. Or maybe she was doing it for money to finance her escape. Lord knows, I can understand why a kid might want to bug out from this life.
She stood without using her hands, her grace distracting Burroughs.
Guardino was quite a looker, and what made her even more attractive was that she didn't even seem to realize it. He extended a hand to her, and she leveraged him up to stand beside her. He held on a moment too long, smiling his thanks. Then his phone rang. He listened for a short minute.
Maybe we finally caught a break. Monroeville PD thinks they found a witness. Thought you might want to head over with me. It could very well be the last person to see Ashley alive.